Welcome to So Ordered, where we create audio readings of SCOTUS decisions to make them more accessible to the public. At the time of creating this podcast, the Supreme Court of the United States does not release audio of the court's decisions. Our mission is to make it so the public can be better informed on decisions of the court by using AI to generate audio of written opinions. The case before us today is Mullen v. Al Otro Lado, docket number 25-5, decided June 25, 2026. Before reading the opinion itself, here is a brief summary of the case and the questions presented. In the spring of 2016, United States Customs and Border Protection began experiencing a surge of aliens seeking admission at ports of entry along the United States-Mexico border, with numbers sometimes far exceeding safe and secure processing capacity. In November 2016, the Department of Homeland Security responded by adopting a policy of metering the number of arriving aliens whom Customs and Border Protection would inspect each day and allow to apply for asylum, with officials standing on the United States side of the border to prevent entry beyond the number the port could adequately process. In 2017, asylum seekers and the immigration advocacy organization Al Otro Lado brought a putative class action against the government, arguing that enforcement of the metering policy unlawfully withheld inspection and asylum processing from aliens who arrive at the border. And a divided panel of the Ninth Circuit ultimately held that an alien arrives in the United States, and thus must be inspected and may apply for asylum, when the alien, while standing on the Mexico side of the border, encounters a United States official at the border. The Immigration and Nationality Act provides that an alien who arrives in the United States may apply for asylum and must be inspected by an immigration officer. The question presented is whether an alien who is stopped on the Mexican side of the United States-Mexico border arrives in the United States within the meaning of those provisions. The court held, an alien standing in Mexico does not arrive in the United States by attempting, and failing, to set foot in this country. An alien arrives in the United States only when he crosses the border. The Immigration and Nationality Act thus neither entitles an alien standing in Mexico to apply for asylum, nor requires an immigration officer to inspect him. Justice Alito delivered the opinion of the court, in which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett joined. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justices Kagan and Jackson joined. Justice Jackson filed a dissenting opinion. As a reminder, the audio is an AI-generated reading of a published opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States. The voice you will hear has been synthesized to loosely resemble that of the justice that wrote the opinion. All tone, inflection, pacing, and emphasis are produced by the AI model and should not be attributed to any justice. The text itself has been lightly adapted to aid in the creation of the spoken delivery. This is a project to attempt to make court decisions more accessible to the public, and any substantive changes during the reading are completely unintentional. Please visit www.supremecourt.gov to read the opinion published by the court. You can find a link directly to the opinion in this episode's description. As the audio is AI-generated, you may hear some audio glitches, including odd pronunciation, noticeable pauses, or repeated words. We do our best to remove these and hope they do not impact your listening experience. To leave us feedback on the show, or to learn more about the podcast, please visit so-ordered.org. The following is the opinion of the court in Mullen v. Al Otro Lado.
This case presents a straightforward question: whether an alien who seeks to enter the United States from Mexico arrives in the United States when he or she is still in Mexico. In the decision below, the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit answered yes. That is wrong. In ordinary speech, no one would say that a person arrives in a place, for example, a house, a city, or a country, before the person enters that place. The context in which the phrase arrives in the United States is used in the immigration statutes at issue here supports an ordinary meaning reading. So does the presumption against extraterritoriality. We therefore reverse. Two sections of the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952, referred to as INA or the Act, are central to this dispute. Congress adopted both provisions in substantially their current form in the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996, IRIRA. And both provisions contain the phrase arrives in the United States. The first, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1225A, governs the inspection of aliens who seek admission to the United States. An alien who wishes to enter the United States lawfully must first be admitted. As used in the INA, admission is a term of art that means the lawful entry of an alien into the United States after inspection and authorization by an immigration officer. So an alien cannot lawfully enter this country without first being inspected by an immigration officer, and immigration officers must inspect all aliens who are applicants for admission or are otherwise seeking admission to the United States. Section 1225A. An alien is deemed an applicant for admission if he arrives in the United States. The government correspondingly must inspect an alien who arrives in the United States, say, at the San Ysidro, California, port of entry, through which millions of people pass every year. But an alien is not entitled to inspection until he arrives in the United States. The meaning of the phrase arrives in the United States accordingly determines whether and when the government must inspect an alien seeking to enter the country. The second of the two key statutory provisions governs a process that may begin during inspection. During inspection, an immigration officer decides whether the alien is inadmissible under Section 1182, which bars entry on grounds related to, among other things, national security, foreign policy concerns, and the alien's health or criminal activity. If the officer concludes that the alien is inadmissible, the officer must generally order the alien removed from the United States without further hearing or review. This procedure is known as expedited removal. An officer may not proceed with expedited removal, however, if the alien indicates an intention to apply for asylum under Section 1158 or voices a fear of persecution. In that event, the immigration officer must refer the alien to an asylum officer for what is known as a credible fear interview, at which the alien must establish a significant possibility of eligibility for asylum under Section 1158. If the officer determines that the alien does not have a credible fear of persecution, the officer must order the alien removed from the United States without further hearing or review, although the alien may request prompt and limited review by an immigration judge. But if the asylum officer decides that the alien does have a credible fear, the officer must detain the alien for further consideration of the alien's application for asylum. Asylum is a status that entitles an alien who is a refugee to remain and work in the United States. A refugee is an alien who is unable or unwilling to return to the country of his nationality because of persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Any alien who arrives in the United States may apply for asylum, and the Attorney General or the Secretary of Homeland Security may, but need not, grant such an application. In sum, an alien that arrives in the United States is entitled to inspection, is deemed an applicant for admission, and may apply for asylum. By contrast, until an alien arrives in the United States, he is not entitled to inspection, is not an applicant for admission, and cannot apply for asylum, except on other grounds not here at issue. In the spring of 2016, United States Customs and Border Protection, CBP, began to experience a surge of aliens seeking admission at ports of entry along the United States-Mexico border. The number of aliens seeking to enter sometimes far exceeded the number CBP could properly process. Long delays slowed the inspection process, and, in the meantime, CBP sometimes ran short of chairs, meals, and beds. The resulting conditions were often unsafe for aliens, and they rendered border facilities insecure. In November 2016, the Department of Homeland Security responded by adopting a policy of metering the number of arriving aliens whom CBP would inspect each day and allow to apply for asylum. To enforce the policy, officials stood on the United States side of the border and prevented entry into the United States by more aliens than the port could adequately process. The metering policy continued through the change in presidential administrations. In April 2018, a CBP official distributed a memorandum that allowed CBP offices to meter the flow of travelers at the land border when necessary or appropriate to facilitate orderly processing and to maintain the security of the port in safe and sanitary conditions. The memorandum empowered offices to establish and operate physical access controls at the borderline, including as close to the United States-Mexico border as operationally feasible. But officers could not discourage an alien from waiting to be processed if the alien claimed fear of return or sought any other protection. And the memorandum stated that an alien must be fully processed once the alien is in the United States. The government reiterated the policy in a second 2018 memorandum, this one issued by the Secretary of Homeland Security. In 2017, asylum seekers and the immigration advocacy organization Al Otro Lado brought a putative class action against the government in the United States District Court for the Southern District of California. Respondents argued that CBP's enforcement of the metering policy unlawfully withheld inspection and asylum processing from aliens who arrive at the border and seek to enter the United States. They sought class-wide declaratory and injunctive relief that would end the metering policy. The district court certified a class of all non-citizens who seek or will seek to access the asylum process by presenting themselves at certain ports on the United States-Mexico border and were or will be denied access to that process by CBP officials. The court then granted summary judgment for the class and declared that the government's denial of inspection or asylum processing to class members who are in the process of arriving in the United States is unlawful, regardless of the purported justification for doing so. The administration rescinded the metering policy in November 2021, shortly after the district court ruled the policy unlawful. A divided panel of the Ninth Circuit affirmed in relevant part. It held that an alien arrives in the United States and thus must be inspected and may apply for asylum when the alien, while standing on the Mexico side of the border, encounters a United States official at the border. The majority based this conclusion on other language in the provision that allows certain aliens to apply for asylum. Such an application may be filed by not only an alien who arrives in the United States, but also any alien who is physically present in the United States. The majority reasoned that if, as the government maintained, an alien arrives in the United States only when he enters the country, the phrase arrives in the United States would be completely subsumed within the phrase physically present in the United States. The majority stated that its interpretation, by contrast, gave every clause and word of Section 1158A an independent meaning. And because Section 1225A, the provision governing inspection and admission, contains nearly identical language, the majority construed it the same way. Judge Ryan Nelson dissented. He argued that an alien arrives in the United States only when he crosses the border into the United States, and he charged that the majority's reading defied text, history, precedent, and common sense. The Ninth Circuit called for briefing on whether to rehear the case en banc, and 12 judges dissented when the court denied rehearing. Judge Bress, joined by 11 other active judges, argued that the panel's ruling contravened the clear statutory text of Sections 1158A and 1225A, and was gravely wrong. Judge Bia and two other senior judges noted their agreement with the dissents. We granted cert. We hold that an alien who is standing in Mexico does not arrive in the United States by attempting and failing to set foot in this country. An alien arrives in the United States only when he crosses the border. We begin by considering what the phrase arrives in the United States means when used in everyday speech. That meaning is clear. A person arrives in a geographic location only when he enters it. To arrive is to reach a destination. See Webster's Third New International Dictionary, 1993, defining as to reach a destination, come to the end of a journey. Also, Oxford English Dictionary, 1989, defining as to come to the end of a journey or to a destination. The preposition in means within the limits, bounds, or area of. On these definitions, a person arrives in a destination when he enters within its area, not before. Everyday examples confirm that understanding. A running back does not arrive in the end zone when he reaches the 1 yard line. A guest does not arrive in a house when he knocks on the front door. An army does not arrive in a city by encamping outside its walls. And a letter does not arrive in a mailbox while it remains in the mail carrier's hand just inches away. Respondents suggest that the meaning of the phrase arrives in shifts when someone blocks the way of the person seeking to arrive. In that circumstance, respondents say, to arrive in a place is merely to be at its threshold. So, on respondents' view, a person does arrive in a house when, although he is not in the house and is merely ready to take the step over the threshold, the homeowner stands on the other side and prevents entry. Put simply, an alien arrives in the United States by attempting to come into the United States. We disagree and return to our earlier examples. The running back does not arrive in the end zone, and 6 points do not go up on the scoreboard when he is tackled at the 1 yard line by the defense. The guest does not arrive in the house when the homeowner locks the door right before the guest tries to open it. The army does not arrive in the city when the city's defenders repel the attack outside city limits. And the letter does not arrive in the mailbox when a dog assaults the carrier a step away from the mailbox. A person arrives in a destination only when he enters it. And that conclusion does not change because someone or something blocks entry. A person arrives in the United States then only when he enters it. Several features of statutory context suggest that the meaning of the phrase arrives in the United States in sections 1158A and 1225A conforms to ordinary usage. The first is the absence from those provisions of reference to attempted entry. Other provisions of the INA refer to both actual entrance into the United States and attempted entrance. For example, an alien who enters or attempts to enter the country at an improper time or place, commits a misdemeanor, and an alien who enters or attempts to enter the country after being removed, commits a felony. Immigration officers may arrest aliens entering or attempting to enter the United States unlawfully. We are required to give effect to Congress's express inclusions and exclusions, so the use of attempt language elsewhere in the INA and the absence of that language in sections 1158A and 1225A signal that Congress enacted the disparate language intentionally and purposefully. An alien who unsuccessfully attempts to arrive in the United States does not arrive in the United States. Second, the INA elsewhere refers to aliens who arrive near a land border. It empowers the Attorney General to deputize state or local law enforcement to help enforce the act in the event of an actual or imminent mass influx of aliens arriving off the coast of the United States or near a land border. Had Congress meant for aliens who arrive at or near the border to be able to apply for asylum and to be entitled to inspection, It could have said so using similar language in sections 1158A and 1225A. Again, we credit that it did not. Third, Congress easily could have required immigration officers to inspect any alien who arrives at or reaches the United States border, and it could have used similar language in specifying which aliens may apply for asylum. It did something like that in an earlier provision. As just noted, the INA uses similar phrases in other provisions. That Congress chose not to adopt those readily available and apparent alternatives supports our conclusion that the ordinary meaning of arrives in the United States controls. Fourth, that Congress amended Section 1158A in IRIRA to replace at a land border or port of entry with arrives in the United States suggests that we should not read those phrases, which carry different ordinary meanings, to have the same meaning. When Congress amends legislation, we presume that it intends the change to have real and substantial effect. Whatever the proper interpretation of the pre-IRIRA provisions, Section 1158A now requires that one must be present in the United States to be eligible for asylum. Respondents contend that our interpretation of the phrase arrives in the United States puts too much weight on the act's use of the preposition in. According to respondents, in tells us little about the meaning of sections 1158A and 1225A because it would make no sense to say someone arrives at the United States or upon the United States. Yet it would be natural to say, and Congress easily could have said, had it wanted to adopt respondents' rule, that an alien must be inspected and allowed to apply for asylum if he arrives at the border or near the border or upon a spot adjacent to the border. Congress did not use those terms. Respondents rest their principal textual argument on the same ground as the Ninth Circuit panel majority, the canon against surplusage. Recall that Section 1158A allows an alien to apply for asylum not only when he arrives in the United States, but also if he is physically present in the United States. Respondents correctly observe that an alien who arrives in the United States is, on the government's view, physically present in the United States. So, they maintain, the phrase arrives in the United States is wholly redundant if read to require physical presence in this country. To avoid that result, they argue, the phrase arrives in must apply to at least some non-citizens who are not geographically present in the country. Their alternative interpretation of arrives in the United States applies that way, and they urge us to adopt it. Although that argument has some force, in the end, it does not overcome the arguments that point the opposite way. The anti-surplusage canon is not an iron rule. As Justice Scalia put it, the canon expresses our general reluctance to treat statutory terms as surplusage. The canon is based on an inference about how a careful writer or drafter of statutes ordinarily uses language, namely, that such a person is usually economical in the use of words. But even excellent writers do not always trim every unnecessary word, and the same is true of Congress. We have acknowledged that Congress sometimes enacts provisions that are superfluous. For that reason, we have adopted interpretations under which, for example, three distinct verbs in the same clause all mean the same thing. Nor are other examples of redundancy uncommon. Some statutes, for instance, pick out a general category alongside a specific subcategory that might in other circumstances be deemed surplusage. And statutory context can rebut the idea that each subsection must have wholly independent meaning. The anti-surplusage canon is useful, but it is subordinate to the cardinal canon that a legislature says in a statute what it means and means in a statute what it says there. Respondents thus err in suggesting that the term arrives in must apply to at least some non-citizens who are not already geographically present in the country. To bolster their argument, respondents assert that we should reject the government's interpretation because it yields pure surplusage. That charge, which the principal dissent repeats, is mistaken. Still, it is true that if arrives in the United States means sets foot on United States soil, then this category of aliens is a subset of those who are physically present in the United States. What explains this redundancy? The most plausible explanation is the link between the arrives in the United States language and expedited removal. Both were added by IRIRA in 1996. Before then, aliens who were physically present in the United States could apply for asylum, but no provision of the INA authorized expedited removal of arriving aliens who were inadmissible under Section 1182. The expedited removal process created by IRIRA begins when an alien arrives in the United States and is inspected, and it seems likely that the arrives in the United States language was added to Section 1158A to correspond with the event, arrival, that triggered this new process. This explanation makes sense of the way that Section 1158A is framed. A careful writer or drafter of statutes may sometimes include language that is not strictly necessary in order to make an important point as clear as possible. And that may well be the reason for the inclusion of the arrives in the United States phrase in the provisions in question. This new language in sections 1158A and 1225A makes it clear that arriving aliens are subject to expedited removal, but that even those aliens may apply for asylum, and that, when they do so, their applications are governed by a special process that allows only limited and expedited review of adverse credible fear decisions. The language allowing applications by aliens who are physically present in the United States was retained in 1996 so that aliens could continue to apply for asylum well after they arrived. For these reasons, the redundancy that troubled the Ninth Circuit is understandable. At any rate, if forced to choose between an interpretation that entails some redundancy and one that contradicts what words usually mean, we would choose the former. Even if statutory text and context were not enough to reject the Ninth Circuit's and respondents' interpretation of arrives in the United States, the presumption against extraterritoriality would tip the scale against that position. This presumption is a long-standing principle of American law under which courts will not give a statute effect outside the territory of the United States unless Congress clearly expresses a contrary intent. We ask two questions when we analyze whether a statutory provision applies outside our borders. We first examine the text of the statute and ask whether the provision unmistakably applies to foreign conduct. If it does, the inquiry ends. If it does not, we move to the second step and ask whether the statute focuses on domestic or foreign conduct. We have sometimes used the presumption against extraterritoriality to determine whether statutes with more or less settled meanings applied outside the United States. Here, the presumption serves a somewhat different purpose: to determine whether either of two interpretations of the phrase arrives in the United States gives extraterritorial reach to the provisions in which that phrase appears. See Small v. United States, decided in 2005, holding, in determining the scope of a statutory phrase, we find help in the common sense notion that Congress generally legislates with domestic concerns in mind. The answer is plain. Nothing in the text of Section 1158A or Section 1225A manifests an unmistakable congressional intent to require that aliens be inspected and allowed to apply for asylum while they are still outside the United States. We must therefore consider the conduct relevant to the provision's focus, and on this score, the difference between the two interpretations favors ours. On our view, the provisions link inspection and the asylum process to what occurs on the United States side of the border, while the Ninth Circuit's and respondents' interpretation trains its sight on the other side, because that interpretation would give the provisions extraterritorial reach. We presume that we should not read the provisions that way. Respondents' remaining arguments fail. First, respondents are mistaken that the interpretation we adopt allows the government to violate the obligations under the 1951 Convention, relating to the status of refugees that the United States assumed through its accession to the 1967 Protocol. Relating to the status of refugees, the protocol requires nations to comply with Articles 2 through 34 of the Convention. Article 33.1 provides that no nation shall expel or return a refugee in any manner whatsoever to the frontiers of territories where his life or freedom would be threatened on account of certain grounds. The government's metering policy, respondents press, flouts that obligation. Our precedent forecloses this argument. We held in Sale v. Haitian Centers Council that the text of Article 33 cannot reasonably be read to say anything at all about a nation's actions toward aliens outside its own territory. Because aliens who are standing in Mexico are outside the territory of the United States, the refusal to allow them to enter does not violate Article 33. In Sale, we ruled that Article 33 allowed the government to gather fleeing refugees en masse to prevent them from reaching our shores and to return them to the one country they had desperately sought to escape without first determining whether they may qualify as refugees. If that course of action is consistent with Article 33, the article surely allows border officials to stop aliens without valid travel documents from entering the United States until they can be processed in a safe and orderly way. The Convention's bar on refoulement imposes a duty on nations not to send refugees that are within their borders to certain places. It does not establish that refugees have a right to enter a nation at the time they prefer. Second, respondents maintain that we should reject the government's interpretation because it will create perverse incentives for aliens to enter the country illegally. According to respondents, if border officials may turn away aliens who arrive at ports of entry and thus deny them the chance to apply for asylum, some aliens will respond by attempting to enter the country illegally at other locations. That concern is overstated and in any event cannot defeat the best reading of the text. Metering does not permanently bar any alien from arriving in the United States and then applying for asylum. It merely delays the date when some may enter. Illegal entry, on the other hand, may be expensive and dangerous, and it carries adverse legal effects. Entry at an improper location is a crime. An alien becomes ineligible for asylum if he unlawfully re-enters the country after having been removed. And an alien unlawfully present in the country is ineligible for various government benefits. An alien whose admission and inspection are delayed due to metering would need a powerful reason to apply for asylum immediately for it to be preferable to run all the risks of illegal entry. Last, respondents argue that acceptance of the interpretation we adopt could cause drastic harm because the government at some time in the future might prevent all potential arriving asylum applicants from ever reaching the point where an application could be filed. For present purposes, it suffices to say that the rescinded metering policy was never anything like that imagined future policy. The government's policy merely delayed entry by some aliens as a way of improving a situation that both interfered with the proper conduct of inspection and created unsanitary, inhumane, and sometimes dangerous conditions at ports of entry. If the government ever adopts the sort of policy that respondents fear, we are confident it would be quickly challenged. The wisdom of the policy of metering alien arrivals at the southern border is not before us. We decide only that an alien standing in Mexico does not arrive in the United States. The INA neither entitles such an alien to apply for asylum nor requires an immigration officer to inspect him. We reverse the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remand the case for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. It is so ordered.